welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Austin is here. He's in the gym right now. I don't know why he's not on time, but he will be here momentarily. But it's good to see you guys. There he is. Good morning, Austin. Glad you can make it.
I'm here.
Center camera, Rich.
I'm here. I'm back.
I've done the introduction.
I know you guys were missing me, really. And I'm here for y'all.
It's Friday. I'm here. I'm back.
Well, I got my first story to cover.
I got my first story to cover.
But I was here first. Here we go. Can food actually be medicine? The doctors say yes.
Yeah.
Now, prescribing produce, crafting meals, more medical schools are now teaching students how to cook and use food as a tool for treating patients.
So you're saying you can actually use food as a tool, not a crutch?
Food is your best medicine.
Yeah.
Lauren Estes, a third-year student at Tufts University School of Medicine, believes knowing how to make chickpea stew will make her a better doctor. She and 14 other students spent a recent evening making dinner as part of a two-month culinary medicine class to train doctors. Dentists and dietitians at the university began offering last spring. Using case studies and cooking, the course aims to convince future medical professionals that good, affordable food targeting specific diseases can be as important as medication. Personally, I think it's more important. It's unfortunately a big misconception that medicine doesn't have anything to do with food, she said, chopping dill with hands she hopes one day will be delivering babies. That the modern American medical system should view the kitchen as an extension of the doctor's office isn't a novel idea, but is riding a populist wave that merges traditionally progressive good food movement with a focus on local food, the environment, and food justice with the largely conservative food center to make America healthy again. What's crazy about this, I told you guys what happened to me with Tulane up in Atlanta. They basically came after me when I was on with Steve and Vicky 25 years ago because I told them that butter was better than margarine on the air, and the big brouhaha happened. I mean, the doggone dietitians came back to the studio and pitched an absolute fit and said, we want equal airtime. He's giving out misinformation because I told them the trans fats were bad. I've told you the story. And now suddenly, major universities and medical programs are now teaching that food can be your best medicine. And we've talked about that so many times, Austin, with low glycemic carbohydrates, how to look at what you're eating, high fructose corn syrup, all the rest of the stuff that's in the foods. So they're not talking about drinks and the sodas and all the stuff. They don't even mention that in here. But I'm going to post this article so you guys can read it. But to me, it's amazing because way back in the 90s, back in the 80s it was, I sit on a talk show one time, you know, your diet and your health are directly correlated. There's a direct correlation between what you eat and how healthy you are, and I got eviscerated for it. The pediatrician, Dr. Henry Red, came after me like a dog on, you know, white on rice, like a dog with a pit bone with a bull, you know, with a bull thigh. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, he was after me because I said that, you know, food could be healthy, make you healthy. And there's certain things you shouldn't eat. That's when I developed the top 10 foods never to eat. And I couldn't believe it. But here we are. So I saw this morning. I thought, after 30, 40 years, Austin, I have been vindicated.
It's finally coming about. Well, more and more people now are starting to ask questions. More people are wondering why they're sick all the time. More people are wondering why their kids are sick all the time. I mean, and nobody wants to bother to ask the questions, what are we eating and what's it doing to us until now? And it's a very, very, very important question. The thing is, you know, you can have some junk food occasionally. You can have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Your body will process it. What it can't do is it cannot be constantly bombarded with unbelievably extreme toxins every single day, all day, for days and weeks and months and years on end, and expect to get positive results out of it. You know, yesterday we were discussing the aspects of B12 deficiency and how common it is now for B12 deficiency. And this is crazy now. This is an article that came out. I was talking about a case study with a 13-year-old boy, and part of this is pretty crazy. I'd double-check it to make sure this was accurate, and it says psychiatric drugs or vitamin B12. That's the question they ask.
That's right.
And it says a case report published in the Indian Journal of Psychological Medicine has important implications for children suffering from neuropsychological disorders. A 13-year-old boy following a lacto-vegetarian diet. I don't know what was going on in the background, why he's on a lacto-vegetarian diet, suddenly stopped talking and exhibited basically disturbed sleep, ideas of worthlessness, hopelessness, aimless wandering, suicidal ideas. That's a pretty big deal for a 13-year-old. Now, I don't know what in the world's on the background. They're not discussing the background of why he was on a lacto-vegetarian diet. Obviously, we've talked in detail, if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you have to take enormous amounts of B12 supplementation because your body's going to be deficient in it, period. You're not getting B12 from your little vegetables and your carrots every
day. If you get a B12, you could act like you're crazy.
Yeah, this is what happened to this kid. Well, here's the crazy part. They said the reports noted on all blood tests, they were looking for basically issues with anemia and thyroid function. They didn't even address B12. The patient was diagnosed with acute schizophrenia disorder. This is a 13-year-old boy treated with lorazepam, this anxiety drug. Then they put him on olanzapine. Then they put him on sertraline. And then they put him on Zoloft, all within a two-week period.
It's going to drive you crazy.
The kid went bonkers.
Yeah.
The kid went nuts. He was completely unresponsive, like non-functional. All he wanted to do was sleep. And then later on, make the story short on here, they went in and found that his B12 levels were at 112 nanograms, which is like below the even low level on there to function properly. And so they said the normal range is supposed to be around 200 to 1,000. That's like average range, 200 being like the absolute low end. His was 112. They basically put him on a high dose of B12 supplementation. His diagnosis was revised to essentially a disorder secondary to cobalamin or B12 deficiency. And behold, after two B12 shots, they immediately were able to taper off all medications. His sanity remained stable during the final period. Two B12 shots. And by the way, that was Sinai cobalamin. Yep. That one, the methyl cobalamin. Two B12 shots, and they were able to take him off four different psychiatric medications at 13 years old.
I wrote a whole article on this on the old
yeah,
list. I hope the article got transferred.
It should have.
And I talk about the B vitamins and psychiatric illnesses. Oh, by the way, the university that came after me was Emory in Atlanta.
Okay.
I want to make sure I clarify that.
Did you realize how crazy that is? They put him on four unbelievably addictive psychiatric drugs instead of just testing his B12, or better yet, giving him like our sublingual B12. I mean, that product will shoot your B12 levels through the roof.
I don't have any of that out here. I need to go grab
some. You took it all.
I think I'm going to get some.
You got some?
I'm going to see if I got some in the house.
I got some in the house.
I will be right back.
Dun, dun, dun. But so, I mean, the fact of the matter is when you read stories like this and you read case studies like this where you have a 13-year-old who's having all these severe symptoms and then they go in and say, oh, we don't know what to do with it. So we're just going to start putting them on antidepressants, anti-anxiety, and anti-this and SSRIs. It boggles my mind. This goes exactly what Ted was just talking about, where doctors now are starting to look at food as a natural medicine, a supplementation as something may actually fix the root problem. Because always remember, in most cases, a large percentage of these pharmaceutical drugs, they don't fix the root cause. They just treat the symptom, not the problem. Big, big key factor to understand there. I have a headache, migraine headache. Okay, we're going to give you ibuprofen. Just being basic example. Well, ibuprofen, you don't have a deficiency in ibuprofen. Ibuprofen is just basically an anti-inflammatory that's going to mask the pain for a short period of time. What's the root cause that's actually triggering the migraine? Oh, we find out it's extremely high blood sugar because the patient is basically drinking a 2-liter of soda of Coca-Cola every single day, and their blood sugar is going through the roof. And now they're starting to basically become insulin resistant. So they're having insanely high sugar and insanely high insulin all day, and it's causing migraine headaches, which it does. Oh, maybe we should put them on berberine and cinnamon extract, clean their diet up, cut the sodas out, headaches go away. Now we've actually addressed the root problem. It's a concept that's eluded a large part of physicians and even just normalized people that constantly think the drug is the fix to everything, and it's not. I mean, there's certain drugs, if you have like you got an infection, okay, we got antibiotics, got it. That's actually treating the problem. You got some type of significant bacterial infection. Okay, we need to put him on antibiotics, basically save his life. Got it. Needed, period. You do something like shatter a wrist, shatter an ankle. You know, you're in a hospital, you barely talk, so functionally painful. You got bones sticking out. They give you Dilaudid morphine in the hospital controlled to cut down the pain. So basically you don't go into shock. Got it. That's a treating actual problem for a short period of time. There's a specific drug for a specific problem, and I agree with that. I'm not against all drugs. But what I am against is just blindly giving people, especially some of these psychiatric drugs that are unbelievably addicted. They turn you into a zombie. I mean, I've had friends when I was in college. That was the Xanax time. And I watched so many people I knew go on Xanax. And I couldn't understand it. Because all it did make everyone want to sleep and all drowsy and druggy and zombie all the time. But they were handing out Xanax like it was candy back then. Then the Adderall generation came out. Everybody started, everybody I knew in my dorm had an Adderall prescription. And the problem with that stuff is it works for a short period of time to stay focused, but then you start getting real jittery, start getting real shaky. The cortisol goes up. You don't want to eat anything. So it has these long-term effects. It cooks your brain if you're taking really, really high doses for a long time because it's an amphetamine. And so it's not actually treating the real problem. A lot of it's usually a nutrient deficiency or an issue with somebody being able to focus in a certain area, and they need to add in more magnesium. They need to add in more B vitamins. They need to add in stuff like the attention factor, which has the L-theanine in it, which is an incredibly good amino acid that helps stimulate that part of the brain to help focus and get jobs done more effectively and tasks done. That's why the attention factor is such a popular product. I love it. I take it all the time. Well, not all the time, but I take a good amount. And stack it with a purple stick. You come back empty-handed?
I used them all. I got to go to the website and order some. This is awful.
Well, since you need to go to the website on here, it is on sale right now for Product of the Week for 13% off. If you want to shop now and buy it.
I think I will.
Yeah, where's your credit card? I don't order it for you.
I have the card left in the house.
I'll deliver it same day.
You can tell that this show is not scripted. I looked all over. I used it.
I have a brand new bottle at my house.
Well, I can do my little segment here in a second. You can run and get me some. I was going to take 10 on the air, let you guys know it won't hurt you.
I'll take a few. I don't know if I'll take 10. I'm going to be up late. Hunter's got to sleep over with his buddies.
No, B-Complex will keep me up, but B12 doesn't.
Well, B-Complex because of everything. There's a lot.
Oh, somebody asked me yesterday. I hate to say this. They only have the money either by B-Complex or B12.
Probably B-Complex.
B-Complex.
Yeah, full spectrum.
Because you get a full spectrum.
And you're going to get B12. You're going to get B12 in the B-Complex.
That's right.
This product is really designed... 5,000 micrograms. I forgot how much is in this. I look at the label. My gosh, it's so strong. This stuff is designed specifically to get your B12 levels up. Now, remember, though, like he said, your body needs full-spectrum B vitamins. So you do need a lot of B vitamins. But this product, for people that are deficient in B12, I have said this. I've personally watched this. I'm not making any claims, just what I've personally seen. This product right now will get your blood levels, your B12 levels up higher than even injectable B12 will do.
We're not making that claim.
Not making that claim, but I've seen it.
I've seen, well, anecdotally.
On paper.
That's how you say it.
There you go.
Anecdotally. We've seen some people have been able to actually elevate their B12.
Allegedly. At some time. Maybe. Leave it at that. What's your next story? I'm going to grab a bottle for you.
Oh, thanks. This is an interesting story. A no-nonsense sheriff delivers brutally honest update on a suspect who killed a detective while getting an eviction notice. And
killed a detective?
Well, listen to this. Stay here for a second. I need your input on this. This sheriff was saying what they did. He was actually running around in tactical gear in the neighborhood. They tried to serve him, to evict him. He's running around tactically, and he shoots a cop and kills him. Now he's running from house to house behind houses in tactical gear, shooting at police like he's in Fallujah or something. So finally, they catch him out on the road, and they're in their armored vehicle. They straight ran him over and mashed him and killed him.
With probably an MRAP or APC.
They crushed him. We're done. And the sheriff said, he says his name was David Morales, 459. He was fatally run over by a Bearcat armored vehicle operated by the members of the Kern County Sheriff's SWAT team following an hours-long standoff. The melee began when Tulare County deputies were serving Morales an eviction notice, and he basically shot. He said, we intentionally ran over him, the sheriff said.
That's heavy shot. That's a hard-armored F-450, what it is. That is a heavy vehicle. Not as heavy as an MRAP, but it's MRAP's designed to handle mines.
The sheriff said, don't shoot at cops. You shoot at cops, we're going to run you over. He got run over, and he got what he deserved. The sheriff explained what Morales was hiding out in the home he was renting in Porterville, which he had not paid rent. The suspect then started running through the yards of three neighboring homes wearing camouflage and tactical gear as he continued to fire at officers. Kern County deputies inside of the Bearcat armored vehicle then searched an area they believed might be hiding, and then they ran him over. So they decided they weren't going to play any games anymore. They're going to use a 12,000-pound truck to run him over.
Here's the issue with this. Their job is to protect. Mm-hmm. When you have somebody that is now just committed, first-degree murder, they're willing to kill other people. Now they're going from house to house. You have to take him out as soon as possible.
And this is why I made the comment that I did yesterday that I've had some feedback on about why the guy in the subway in Charlotte who slit that girl's throat should have been shot on the spot by somebody who was basically going to protect the girl. And now he's not even going to go to trial because they say he's mentally
unfit
incompetent.
For trial. But he was able to be tried on dozens of other cases and convicted.
Well, I think he's just playing. Well, he's already stupid anyhow. But now he's just playing even more stupid, like he's mentally ill or something. But the problem is that, you know, he was happy he did it. And then now all of a sudden it's like, well, we can't try him. I can't even imagine how mad the parents and the families and the other people who knew this woman are.
I can't imagine how dark of a soul you have to be the defense attorney that's representing him and actually play that game in front of the jury, in front of the family, and say, oh, he's unfit for trial. But he was fit for 22 other charges and been convicted of, but he's not fit for this one, for going behind a female while she's on her phone, not paying attention and cutting her throat. You got to be a special slime ball, boy, to be a defense attorney to do
okay,
that.
Okay, now let's see what we can learn from this, okay? Because there's not much to learn, but we're going to learn about this. If you're in a public area like this, including, now listen to me for a second, including, ladies, listen to me, please.
Especially females.
I go out on a date, and I always say, okay, I need the last table next to the wall.
Correct.
Okay? And I always face the door.
Correct.
Okay? I don't want anybody coming up behind me. I was a bouncer in my mom's bar. It was not one of my better points of life. And I remember one time I turned my back on somebody who weighed me about 100 pounds, and he straight sucker punched me. And I tell you what, that was a lesson I learned one time, and once was enough.
Watch your back.
Watch your back. And if you're going to be in a subway, get against the wall of the subway cab all the way back in the chair farthest to the end, or stand against the wall and keep observational awareness. I see all of these ladies, and I'm sorry, ladies, I'm picking on you right now. They're running down the street, you know, in their jogging clothes, and they're wearing headsets.
Yes.
Do you just want to get mugged?
I've said this repeatedly, man. Public outdoor exercise is great. I love it. It's not the time and place to wear a headset, though, man. You can't wear earbuds. I did the other day. Perfect example. I'm a very acute driver. I'm very aware. I had to slam on my brakes in the truck on the office the other day. Kid's walking, earbuds in, on his phone. And I mean on his phone, his chin in his chest, on his phone. Walks across the street. Doesn't look right by the office. It's right where the curve, where it was the Y. I'm turning. I'm driving in my lane. He just walks across the street. He just walks parallel across the road. Head down, earbuds. Didn't he see me?
I hope you lit him up.
I lit him up with a horn. I had my regular train horse. I rolled the window down. He's like, oh. I looked at him. I didn't yell at him. I said, take your ears out. He took it out. I said, dude, you got to watch where you're going, kid. I said, if I want to pay attention, I want to hit you. I didn't tell you about this. He's like, okay. They walked over. He's in the grass. Probably 12, 11, 12. Old enough to know.
You know what I've done with those before, I would say, I want you to walk home. I'm following you.
Yeah.
I've done
this. Get shot either.
No. And then, I walk, I follow him with it. Yeah. I've done it before. And I knock on the door and I tell his parents.
Yeah.
I've done that. I say, you got to get this kid off the road. I almost hit him.
I just walked across. I mean, didn't even glance up from his phone, dude. And had earbuds in. You're on your phone, it's bad enough. I always tell people, if you've got to really check your phone in an area that's especially a little sketchy, if you've got to check it, don't get your head down. Get your head up. You got to pull your phone up. You got to check it real quick. See who called. Pick it up so you still got peripheral. Put your phone back in your pocket.
And the thing I don't like, I don't like people walking up on me on the sidewalk.
Oh, no. Especially when you're walking and somebody's right behind you. They're walking fast, but they don't want to pass you, but they're right on you. I did this in Daytona at the Daytona 500. Not Daytona 500. I don't know, the Daytona 24-hour Rolex with Hunter, the GP Cup race. We're walking. The race is all night, by the way. It's 24 hours. It's like 1 in the morning. Hunter went going to go to the bathroom, so we were walking to another spot, and this guy's walking behind me and Hunter. It's not that busy. I mean, people are, and he's like 2 feet off me. And I finally stopped, turned sideways, and looked at him. I said, you can go first. Ugh, I think he was drunk. He wasn't paying attention. But I can't stand that, dude. Have common courtesy. If you're walking in a public area and there's room, don't be pushing somebody, because you're liable to get shot if you're not paying attention. You start walking up on somebody like that, and they don't trust you, they don't like you, older combat veterans.
I can't tell you how many dates I've been on the last 4 years. I've been over in Ybor City or in Tampa or someplace, and somebody walks up behind me, and I just stop.
I'm sorry, I'll turn sideways.
I'll tell my date, stop for a second. Yeah. And then she'll go, what's going on? I said, nobody walks up behind me.
I'll let them pass. If you're in that big of a hurry, by all means, go.
Well, they sneak up on you, and you hear them kind of like run, and they stop, and they walk slow, and you're like, no, man, you go on around me.
If you got someone behind your back, it takes about 0.2 seconds to get a knife in your kidney, and you don't even know what happens. It's that fast. And
then you bleed out.
You bleed out. And that you will not survive very long. EMTs will not be there in time. So having somebody come up behind you, No bueno. So lesson learned from this horrible situation. Don't put your back to the general public if you're riding a public transit.
And if you're with a real alpha male, he's not going to let you walk on the street side.
Heck no.
You're going to walk on the inside. So in case somebody tries to grab your purse or whatever, a car going by, he can stop it or whatever. And ladies, listen to me. Don't date a wussy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't. If you got a man who won't protect you and he's going to go run and urinate on himself if something happens and be scared, that ain't your boy. That ain't your man. Just find somebody who's not like that. I mean, and I know it's a difficult task nowadays because they've raised the kids to be so limp-wristed now. But the sad part about it is that don't be with somebody who can't protect you. Now, ladies, I know if you have your feminist friends and you send this letter, this email to them, this show to them, they're gonna be all mad. They're gonna basically get.
Why can I walk on the side of the street? Well, by all means, okay, do so.
And honestly, ladies, listen to me. If you want to be the alpha female in a relationship and you want to protect your man, okay, which happens a lot, then by all means do so. You can go right ahead and do what you think you need to do and have fun with all that. And I've seen it. I watched it the other day. I watched a guy get mugged and his girlfriend get mugged, and she basically defended him. And I thought to myself, okay, great. How much have we inverted and twisted the society and twisted society to this point that a guy who basically is sitting there, you got to remember, you see him. Years ago, this happened on numerous occasions. I'm going to give you a compilation of different things. And I had a guy come over to the house to work out with one of my other kids. And he was, wearing leotards and sweats and he was dressed like a girl, honestly. And I said, I couldn't even believe it. And finally, he was doing all these effeminate mannerisms. And I finally said to him, I said, you got to stop this. I said, I don't want you around my kids acting like this. And he didn't realize he was doing it. Now, this is the problem. He was being raised in a single mother household. And that's the problem that you run into when you don't have an alpha male who's going to teach the boys how to walk. That's the whole song, remember, by the Four Seasons, walk like a man. Talk like a man. If you don't have somebody who's going to teach them how to do that, they have no proper mentorship. They're going to be basically, modeling feminine characteristics, and they're not going to be an alpha male. They're going to be a beta, and a lot of times they end up being gay. Years ago, Katie Couric did this show. I think it was on Dateline NBC, and she wanted to know what would happen if lesbian couples and homosexual couples raised children, whether or not the kids would become gay or not be gay. But I guess it's about as politically incorrect as you could get nowadays, but that's what she did the show. Now, she went into these lesbian households, and she found that every single lesbian household that raised little boys, the little boys were gay, all of them. Because the little boy has to have a relationship with his father. He has to have a male mentorship. He has to have somebody to who he can basically emulate. And if he doesn't, he's going to emulate his parent, his mother. I've seen it over and over and over again. Now, that's not in every single case. That doesn't necessarily mean they're gay. A lot of guys that act effeminate aren't gay. I'm just going to say that. But a lot of them are. And that's a lot of them were raised that way. And then she went to a household basically that had homosexuals raising little boys. And what they found was it was very, very interesting. In the lesbian households, every single little boy that they raised was gay. And in the homosexual homes that they talked to the homosexual parents, every little boy was straight. Now, that's an odd thing. You wouldn't think that it would work that way, but it did. And so it's important that you give proper mentorship to your children. You got B12 for me, don't you?
I got B12 for you.
All right, I'm going to take some right here on the air while I got my camera on. I'm going to take
some. I already had B-complex annals and multiple this morning.
Well, I've already.
Four? So four is good for me.
Give me five.
No, five?
Yeah, I'm going to
give you five. There's six for me. There's how many you want?
I'm going to take five. Now, you guys.
Where'd my screen go?
I don't know. It was making noises a second ago. All right, here we go. Ready?
It was making
one.
Noises.
Yeah, you got that camera. One,
five,
two, three, four, five. Okay, there's five. Let you know this stuff's not toxic. It's water soluble. Now you say
it's supposed to be dissolved. I'm kind of chewing, but I'm
it actually tastes good. And so that lets you know that we take our own product. I was out of the house. Thank you, Austin. I was deficient in those. Now I'm sure. And not really because I take it to be complex. But I want you guys to realize.
That's good. It actually tastes really good.
By the way, as I'm talking.
But don't give a handful of me. I mean, I'm going to say this from experience. Don't let your 9-year-old son get a hold of them either and start eating them like candy. Hunter did that a while back ago. I like these. How many you had? I was like five. I don't think he came inside until like 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, by the way, Gallo Winery, the largest wine producer in the United States, they make some really Cheap wine.
Cheap wine? Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than cheap wine.
My mom. Okay, let me say something to you.
Box wine.
No. No.
If you can drink wine, you're good wine.
We had a fish camp, right? And so we had different cottages, and a couple of the guys in the cottages liked their wine. And we called them winos. And I know this is so politically incorrect, it's outside of the realm of most people's thought, okay? And they would stay drunk on wine every day.
Yeah.
And so mom sold Gallo wine. That's how I remember Gallo.
Oh, she sold that kind.
No, she sold Gallo because it was cheap,
like the box wine.
Oh, yeah. It was like $1 a bottle back then, right?
Gosh.
And I remember they would stay drunk all the time. And then we had a neighbor. His name was Paul. And he used the Gallo wine. And so they all pretty much died of liver cirrhosis. And what happened is Paul, the guy next door, this is my dude, he shouldn't be telling you this
story.
No, listen to this.
Gallo wine.
No,
okay,
listen.
Got it.
So Paul next door dies.
Okay.
Okay. And Roxy, his wife, okay, I'm not going to give you their last name. This is a story from a long time ago. She decides that, he's just having a drunk. He's laying there just drunk. So she lets him lay on the floor for 3 days.
She thinks he's blackout drunk for 3 days?
Well, he's dead. And finally, she calls up the police because he started smelling. And they had to haul his corpse out. Hence why I don't want to live like that.
And Gallo wine has a special affinity for you,
oh,
obviously.
Oh, God. So when I hear this about winos, it's just,
Gallo wine.
No, it's just horrible. And
just dropped today.
And then one day, it's like 3 a.m. I've never told you the story.
No.
Okay? Their place was so run down. They had these pine trees everywhere. These Australian pine trees.
Oh, that's just kindling.
Oh no! And somebody, they were all piled up around our house. And somebody stopped on the side of the road. Some pyromaniac, and threw a match in her front yard to burn her house down. Now I don't even think they thought anybody was living there.
Pine needles. I mean, if you got those, you got to keep those things raked up a certain point.
Oh, well,
they get thick enough. So,
so at 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody's banging on my door, mom's door, saying this house is being burned next door. So I jump up. And I run over there with a rake and a shovel. And I start, it was burning. And I got it put out. On my own little self, I was probably 13 years old, 12 years old. I mean, why was that my responsibility, right? And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, but I saved her life. So I went over the next morning and started talking to her. And she started yelling and cussing at me because of the fire. And I looked at her and I said, I'm the one who put it out. I didn't do this. I'm making sure you're okay. And you're not you haven't died of smoke inhalation. And then I started bringing her sandwiches over. And finally, after two or three sandwiches, I said, well, did you eat the last sandwich? Well, no, the rats got to it before I did. Oh, yeah. Nice neighbors, right?
Yeah, it's probably just Steph Gallo wine. Seems to have
my gosh.
Anyhow,
so here's back to the story. Gallo wine, the largest wine producer in the United States and the world by volume, has completed a major pivot into hard liquor. The family-owned giant finalized its acquisition of the iconic Kentucky bourbon brand for Roses from Japan's holdings in a deal valued at $775 million. The move comes as the U.S. wine industry grapples with steep decline in sales. That's because everybody's tired of getting fat. That's why this has happened. In sales and generational shift from traditional wine, especially among younger Americans. The transaction, which closed April the 2nd, 2026, returned Four Roses, which was founded in 1888 and long regarded as one of the most respected premium bourbons, to American ownership for the first time in 83 years. Gallo's chief commercial officer, Brett West, called the brand one of the most respected bourbons in the world, defined by heritage and craftsmanship. The existing Four Roses team included, we're done. I'm gonna post this so you can read it. Now, I'm not picking on Gallo wine. I don't like any kind of wine, period, done. It's awful. But I'm telling you this, a lot of people get addicted to this stuff, and it stops the production of an enzyme. 1 ounce a day, one glass of wine will stop the production of lipase, massively reduce it in your body, which helps to burn fat instead of store fat. And it takes about 3 days for the lipase values to get back up. So if you have a glass of wine on Monday and Thursday, you're going to start gaining body fat really fast.
Correct. Your body takes about 2 to 3 days to reset from alcohol. The only one I do say, I know I've only had it a couple times, but the only wine that I've actually enjoyed is blueberry wine.
We had that in Europe.
It's real sweet. I mean, you have an ounce, so it'll shut your body fat burning down. But it's real sweet. You don't drink a lot of it, but it's a really cool, like a blueberry full-bodied flavor.
Sharon and I had some of that in Austria many years ago because it was free. They had a wine tasting thing at a hotel we were at in Austria. And we tasted it and said, okay, that's all right. But the problem is, my mom had a problem with alcohol. She did. And so I don't want to be in a situation. My brother's a straight-blown alcoholic. My half brother. And so I don't want to be in a situation where I start drinking and start liking alcohol so much that I want to start drinking every single day. I'm not going to do that.
Remember what I told you guys the other day? And I gave you the research on it. The cortisol in your body goes up almost 5x the next day after drinking moderately the next day. And it takes 2 to 3 days for that cortisol to get back.
And that stores body fat too.
That massively ages you. And on top of that, like you said, after about 2-3 days, even if you don't drink, you drink again on the fourth day, your cortisol goes back up again. One of the main reasons I've seen a lot of issues now with individuals that drank really heavy back in the day, they start having high blood pressure problems. Mm-hmm. Because what it does with the cortisol, what does it stress on the cardiovascular system? The high amounts of alcohol on a regular basis, it's going to kill you. Just flat out. You got to stay away from it.
Everybody that I know that drank a lot when I was a kid, they all died young, and or they got unbelievably sick and lived in this unbelievably almost vegetative state because they couldn't do anything as they got older. And it happened every single time. Now, the crazy thing is they came out with this French paradox about 25 years ago.
Right.
So 30 years ago, whatever it was now. And they said, well, the reason the French people live so long is they drink wine with every meal. It was a complete and total lie. That's how the manufacturers of alcohol pushed this thing. Wine manufacturers.
The same way the cereal manufacturers did the study that said eggs were bad for you. Mm-hmm. Same exact concept.
But if you read to the very end of the study, it says if you don't drink, don't start, because it increases the risk of pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, alcoholism, osteoporosis, and breast cancer. So don't start. So in other words, if you do get a little bit of health benefit from this because of the resveratrol, okay, it's not going to be worth what it's going to do to you.
See, resveratrol has extremely good antioxidant properties. Mm-hmm. It's got restorative properties. It helps out with energy metabolism. The problem with it is high dose of resveratrol like we have in our formula is fantastic. Some red wines have decent amount of resveratrol. The problem is to get the dose of resveratrol you need to have the antioxidant properties like our formula, you need like 2 to 3 bottles of wine. Which means the alcohol is going to completely negate any of the positives the resveratrol is doing as far as cardiovascular properties, antioxidant properties, blood pressure properties, period. That's the issue with the study. Is resveratrol in red wine healthy for you in concept? Yes. Is drinking a high amount of it with a high amount of alcohol with resveratrol going to have long-term health benefits? No, it's really not, because alcohol is going to override that. So if you're trying to get the benefits of resveratrol, that's why we have the resveratrol plus formula, which has the quercetin, transveratrol, and basically the transpirin built-in. These things are giving you significant antioxidant benefits and cardiovascular properties with zero side effects on it.
Now,
that's why I put this formula together.
Now, let me finish the thing with the French paradox. The French people have really good quality food. I was there just a few months ago.
They don't eat soybean oil.
They don't seed oil. They don't eat the seed oil.
Everything's olive oil.
They don't eat seed oils, and they don't do trans fats. They don't do any of that stuff, which all increases the risks of heart disease. So the problem when you do a study like this, which is purely anecdotal, you start saying, oh, look at this. This is an observational study. The French have lower incidence of heart disease. Well, it has to be the wine. No, it doesn't. It's their diet. They eat clean. Now, you say, well, a lot of these people in Paris are just mean. Well, yeah, because they're probably chronically hungover. Hangovers are always bad.
Honestly, though, I'm not going to lie. I'd be unbelievably pissed off if I had millions of people in my city that were sleeping on mattresses.
Oh, they were like that before that.
Now they got a reason. I mean, the videos I've seen over there of Paris, like, I don't
know. I was just there. It's that bad.
This guy's walking down the street, and it looks like he's in, like, some Bacara over in, like, Benghazi. I mean, he's walking around. He's like the only white guy walking around there. And I mean, it's like they've got these street vendors. It's like, it looks like a Bacara. And I'm like, he goes over, next street over. He goes, yeah, oh yeah, I'm in Paris. No cut on the video. He goes, I'm in Paris. By the way, you guys thought I was in Africa. I'm in Paris.
No, it was so funny because we're walking down the, however you say it, Champs-Élysées or whatever you call that thing. The big thing where the Nazis marched through with the Arch de Triomphe.
Oh, with the big arch?
Yeah. Okay.
That's a cool spot.
Everybody knows where that is. They've seen the parade pictures of the Nazis.
Is that the one that, When James Bond, that one, ran that tank through it?
I think it was, but I think that was the stage.
Well, yeah, stage. I'm sure they tear that down.
But the crazy part about it is that we're walking down the street, right? And we're looking at everything. It's all really nice.
Yeah.
And we turn off one street.
No, that's how it just said. It's like one street over.
We got like 100, 200 feet down, ghetto. Homeless people, panhandlers, everywhere.
It's like a Bacara.
I thought, okay, this is not cool. This is bad. And I said, now I feel like I'm in Benghazi. This is like, that happened that fast. And we had got on the wrong road and gone to the back. And I saw that big overpass with like 1,000 tents with palace that could water, run water underneath and get all the feces out. And I thought to myself, this is Paris. This is supposed to be the city of lights. This is supposed to be the most beautiful place in the world. I thought, it's like San Francisco. San Francisco, same thing. So that's what happens. Remember, France is socialist. It's a communist country. And they give stuff away. And these people live like beggars, intense, because they brought them all in from Somalia with their 60 IQs. You think, well, you're picking on Somalians. Yeah, I am, actually. You bring somebody in with a 60 IQ, you know, in our military, they don't like taking people over with less than an 80 IQ because they can't train them for even simple tasks. Well, with a 60 IQ, you can pretty much figure out how to take a dump, poop, you know, outside of the tent, and that's about it.
I don't know if a lot of people know this. They may have changed the policy. This is back when I was in the OCS program, Marine Corps. They would not allow you to go in enlisted if you had been using amphetamines like Adderall or Ritalin for X amount of time. Mm-hmm. If you've been on a prescription, there's so many years, it hit an X mark, where if you've been on those type of ADHD medications for so many years, they would not accept you even in basically enlisted.
Well, they don't want to take drugs in the military.
Well, not even that, though, too. They realize that they're not giving you a script in basic. You go to Paris Island, you don't get to have your Adderall the whole time. You didn't. You may now. In OCS, you got nothing in OCS in Quantico.
20 years ago.
Nothing. And so they don't want you sitting over there going through amphetamine withdrawals while you're basically in Paris Island, shaking on the ground. You know, I feel horrible.
Then they know that you're going to be looking for those same amphetamines because you're addicted
correct
to them when you get
and then
in.
You're going to deploy to Afghanistan. Then you're going to find out what poppy is. Then you're going to go, oh, man, wow, that looks like fun, too, because I haven't had Adderall in 5 years. And, again, I'm totally speculating and making a joke out of that. But, yes, no, it's a problem. So when you start seeing this stuff, you start bringing people over, and then you have these drugs, and you have everything else. You got to be careful with this entire world. They're trying to normalize everything.
Well, here's what they're trying to normalize. Now, listen to this. World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, this Verrückte, some person from Germany, not he was actually Switzerland. He's basically he's Jewish and he's an absolute scumbag. He'd like to walk out. He walked on the Lake Geneva shores if he was on Lake Geneva wearing a wedding gown.
It was pretty obnoxious.
You can look at a picture. Klaus Schwab wears a wedding gown. I mean, I won't even show you the picture on here. It's like an R-rated photograph.
It was before AI, by the way, too.
It says World Economic Forum says Klaus Schwab, water, soil, and oxygen should not be indefinitely accessible. They are assets that should be included in the global economic balance sheets.
Oxygen?
The more smog in the sky, the more people will buy, Mr. O'Hare. All of these things are a must and will be tokenized, reducing everything to data points and lines of code. The World Economic Forum says that the essential building blocks of life, air, water, and soil, all need to be commodified and must be accessed in limited and permissible quantities to the public, because you're stinking cow, you're a goyim. You better pay attention.
Remember when I always make the joke, and everybody finally gets it? The boys that love free air, they love free air for them.
Carbon pricing and taxing is certainly not a new concept for the likes of the WEF or for those of the United Nations or the International Monetary Fund. But now that is defined and what it may look like in the new global economic system that was only partially explained by those speaking at WEF. Remember, by 2030, you'll own nothing. You'll own nothing. You'll be happy. Oh, yeah, watch what we do to you next. These views were expressed during a panel discussion at the annual meeting of the new champions held in China. The title of the discussion is called Understanding Nature's Ledger. Balance sheet.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
The moderator, Skipper, editor-in-chief for the journal Nature, began by talking by saying the panel will emphasize the need to move beyond current economic indicators to mainstream natural capital decision-making and the need for proper accounting of the ecosystem services. It refers to the stock of renewable and non-renewable natural resources, plants, animals, air, water, soils, and minerals that combine to yield the flow of benefits to the people. Skipper said that valuing economic models that prioritize assets such as clean air and water and nutritious food and human well-being is imperative, monetizing it. Evaluate, that's what he's doing. The good news, there is good news, she added, is that there are coordinated international efforts to expand beyond the traditional concepts of capital and profit. You know, I'm going to say something here, and I'm trying not to say something ugly. I'm trying not to cuss. Every once in a while, I'll say a bad word. You guys have to forgive me for that. I've got no halo to adjust. I'm not there. You know what I mean? We're all sinners saved by grace through our Lord Jesus Christ, period. But these guys really piss me off. I mean,
they really do.
No, they want to rape little children because they want to take the energy from them. Just thought I'd mention that. The Epstein files. If you don't believe it, you can take a look at it. They want to do all this weird, perverted stuff because they don't consider you to be a human being. The Kabbalists consider that they've made you because they've created you and that you're not from God and you're just their creation. And you think they don't really believe that. Yeah, they really believe that. And they really have this totally twisted thing that they could go into Lebanon the other night and kill thousands of people, women and children. Man, it's okay. You know, thousands of airstrikes now into Lebanon.
This is all the other day.
Yeah. You know, and...
Oh, and I found this out. But they're talking about basically, you know, Hezbollah the Hezbollah, you know, we're basically going to attack them, blah, blah, blah. The defense contractor that I know told me this about Hamas 2 years ago. He said the issue with this entire concept with this Hamas, he goes, anyone in Palestine, this is what he told me verbatim, anyone in Palestine who refuses orders or resists at any point in time is automatically classified as Hamas, meaning you're trying to exfil out of your house because they're going to demo it in 24 hours. You have your wife and kids. IDF shows up with machine guns in your face. They plan on raping your wife. You pull out your firearm. You're executed. Your entire family's executed because you're now Hamas. They drag you out of your house. They tell you to get on the ground. You say, no, I don't comply. You're now classified as Hamas, and they interrogate you and basically beat you into a black site. Anything you do that says no to IDF or the Israel state, you're automatically classified as Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the new Hamas terminology. Remember, Netanyahu funded Hamas with $35 million a month through Qatar with cash. Tucker Carlson covers the whole thing. Qatar spit the whole paper receipt out on it. Hezbollah has just now become the new Hamas. Hezbollah has always been a basically defense group that basically has been sick of all the stuff that Israel has been doing. I'm not supporting Hamas. I'm not supporting Hezbollah. I'm not supporting Iran. I'm as sure as heck not supporting Israel. What I'm saying is, how is it this constant rules for thee but not for me is applying to this country in the Middle East that basically there's no ceasefire for Lebanon? This is no. Doesn't matter. We're going to send our strikes in whenever we want.
You said something in the truck yesterday. We had to run over to Tampa yesterday, and it was interesting. It's like an hour drive. We're talking in the truck, and he said, this is kind of like this. Your neighbor basically says, you know, I don't like, you know, your yard the way it looks. And you go, are you threatening me? Well, no, I'm not threatening you. Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to run in and I'm going to
throw
a frag grenade through your window. And,
yeah.
And you're like, well, don't do that. And they throw a frag grenade. Well, then you come back and you shoot them. And they say, oh, wait a minute. They shot at me, so now I'm going to destroy them.
Now I'm going to burn the entire house down.
But you fragged them. You threw a frag grenade through the house. You know,
and then the neighbor across the street goes, you just blew up their entire house, dude. You can't do that. Well, he shot at me. You threw a frag grenade through the window.
No.
You're going to attack me now. You're across the street. You don't like what I did to him? So then he throws a frag grenade through his other neighbor's window.
No, let me give you.
It's just a concept that makes no sense.
Let me give you an example. This is a personal example, okay? Years ago, we had an easement issue.
No.
Okay? Let's just be real here. We had an easement issue that we had to deal with, okay? And we basically said, look, you know, you've got another way in and out of your property. Please take your other way. We don't want to give you an easement because you're driving, you know, 40 miles an hour with little kids running around. Please don't do this. And they said, well, we're not going to do that. And I said, well, please don't do it. Please just stop the driving like this. They wouldn't do it. They kept driving like that. So finally, we put up a gate and said, use your own entrance. Well, they decided to go in and barricade the property with a fake and phony quick claim deed. I kid you not, because we asked them to slow down and use their own entrance. It actually happened to me. We didn't do anything. We just asked them to respect our privacy and respect our children and grandchildren so they wouldn't run over them.
And the problem that had been occurring, and I personally witnessed it, is there were more and more people that were living down the street. Other people moved in down there, other families, whatever it may be. And you had multiple people that were literally coming down the street anywhere between 35 to 45 to 50 miles an hour.
On a one-lane road.
On a one-lane road. It's like on the side of a lake. It's literally a one-lane road. And that's how you get to the lake, is you cross with the kids. And I had siblings, and we were always going down there to the lake, and I'd watch them. And there were people that would drive by, and I'm not joking, sometimes 40-plus miles an hour.
And then they would drive by and flip you off.
Yeah.
They would do that, too.
It escalated.
Yeah.
It escalated on every account.
Well, no, and that's exactly what we're talking about here. You know, everybody just needs to leave everybody else alone and treat everybody else with respect. Here's what they said in this article. Listen to this. Listen to what these boys who breathe free air are saying now. Listen to this absolute dribble they're putting out. Now, listen to it. Nature is treated within the economy as though it is unlimited and predominantly as though it's free. It is free, you idiot. We breathe free air, just like you do. And the risks and harms are simply not costed in financial terms. What? Everything is about greed with these guys. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. We can cost them at a macro level. They're not costed into a day-to-day decision-making. And as a result, is a consequence we've all put of our economies at fundamental risk. We can't do business on a dead planet, so we're going to protect niche. No, they want to make. They want you to pay for the air that you breathe because you're
exactly
a carbon.
Right.
You're a carbon unit. You know, last time, let me give you a little news flash here. I took a really good class called botany when I was in college. Plants breathe in carbon dioxide. They breathe out oxygen. This is how it works. It's called the ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, so when we breathe out carbon dioxide, we feed the plants, period. It doesn't hurt anything with CO2 emissions. What hurts is when you have pollutants coming out like carbon monoxide. That's toxic. When you have all kinds of things like volcanic ash that blows up in this, like Mount St. Helens, that messes up the environment. But the point is, the Earth has been in ecosystem balance for thousands of years.
Or like coal power plants with no wet scrubbers in China. Still. Or India, the most polluted country in the world. But we're not going to talk about that at all.
No, I have a friend who went to India, and they said they were eating at a restaurant, and the rats walked up and started eating the food off the floor. And they said, we are never going back here. This place is a nightmare. But when you go to China, they tell you from the cruise ship, you got to have to put a wet washcloth around your face. You have to bring your own wet scrubber.
If you remember, they had to shut down.
I was there.
Before they had the Olympics.
They had to shut the plants down.
They shut all the plants down, all the cars down. Remember, they still put a lot of two-stroke stuff over there. Two-stroke? I mean, hey, you got to put a DEF on your diesel so it cuts your fuel mileage in half and basically has like zero output and blows up every 100,000 miles. But China still has two-stroke motors they run over there on the street. Not even using catalytic converters.
It was the reason they did it to us and not to China is they wanted to destroy our economic productivity, period. Because they wanted China to replace us on the world stage as far as production. That's why they allow China to run out there. Wet scrubber technology is almost 70 years old. You have a smokestack making coal, right? Burning coal. It's polluted as crap. It really is. Let's use slow sulfur fuel. So what they do, they would put wet scrubbers, big brushes, and they put them on top of the stacks and they would move back and forth.
Okay. And they had to filter through them.
And they had to filter through the air. The smoke had to filter through them, and all the precipitates would come roll down, and they would get discarded and not get in the air. They don't even do that in China. It's 70-year-old technology. You go up there, you can't even see sometimes 100 yards. It's that polluted. And we get there with the cruise ship, and we stop, and we get back on the ship the next day, and all of a sudden, the ship's covered in ash. And they're out there with water hoses, hosing it off. It's from the not having wet scrubbers.
Corrosive.
We're 30, 40, 50 miles out to sea. We run into fog. We think it's sea fog. And they said, well, no, it's not sea fog. Don't open the doors. This is pollution coming off the mainland of China. I'm not making this crap up. I was there. This is firsthand testimony from Ted. I was there.
But then they want to tax. Remember, the only way a out-of-control, failing government has the ability to continue functioning is as it continue to steal and tax people. This is always what happened in medieval times.
This is what we talk about.
Kings would be on these random crusades. I'm going to go take over another country. I'm going to go do another thing. I want another lavish castle. So what they do is they send tax collectors in. There's evidence, very evident as far as you want to see a film about it. It's like old with Robin Hood, Russell Crowe. They come in, they say, by the way, taxes are due. Well, they're not due yet, are they? Well, they're due early. Okay, well, here's my 10% tax. Well, it's not 10% anymore. The king is now levied as 25%. I don't even have that much money to pay you. I can't even eat. That's more money I even have. Oh, well, you go to debtor's prison. Now you're going to work for pennies on the dollar until you pay it off. Well, I can't even work to feed my family with the money that it's paying off. Doesn't matter. Off to jail, you. Goodbye. Hang them from the bridge if you resist. That's how it functioned. That's where we're going back with a feudal system. That's the design and technology they want. They want to. If anybody has done any research, the level of taxation that we have right now, that's why I always tell people, always abide by all taxes, always follow the laws, but always make sure you stay within the boundaries. And there's a lot of boundaries you can stay in and still make things happen. So be sure and be curious and look at things and have an open mind. Just put it like that. Because there's so many ways that people have been taught over the years to live in a box, to basically keep you kept down. That's what the entire tax bracket system is about. You look at these companies like Nike. They pay the income tax half the time. They have their subsidiary LLC that's based in another country that's not taxable.
They're doing badly, by the way, because they went woke.
Jaguar. Oof. That's when they went woke. That commercial still boggles my mind. It's a commercial of all, like, hermaphrodite trannies walking around in weird outfits, and they go, Jaguar. What's that? I don't mean, is it a car commercial? Is it a car? Where's the car in the commercial?
My response to the marketing team is, what's wrong
with you? You're fired. That's my response. Or hey, Cracker Barrel, we're just going to change everything and make it look like a redneck Denny's.
I tell you what, though, they reversed it.
Oh, they snapped title. Now, they lost, $100 million market share, whatever it was. Some insane amount of cash in the market share.
Go
1 week.
This is a funny story I've got to do now. We got to do a funny story.
Funny story.
This is great.
True story.
You know, when people date. Okay.
Oh God! Here we go.
No! This
I got a health article going to cover.
Okay, I meet you. We got 5 minutes on this one. You guys are going to like this one. I went out with a girl a few years ago, and she had broken up with her boyfriend after 7 years, and then she found out that he'd been dating 5 different women at one time. Now this sounds like something you see on a soap opera. Okay, But it was true, and I told her I didn't go out with her. She's nuts. But the reality was is, you know, that wasn't her fault. He was doing that. But it happens all the time with guys and with women too. They all do this. And nowadays, because nowadays it seems to be this weird world of dating. And here it is in Mexico, Veracruz, Mexico. Wild moment. Women brawl and get into a fist fight over a dead man's coffin after learning they both had been dating him. A viral video captured brawl at a funeral in Veracruz, Mexico, after two mourners reportedly suddenly realized they'd been dating the same deceased man. Now, obviously, his will was already in place, if he had a will. Obviously, they already knew that he was dead. But yet, they still had to get into a fist fight over the casket. I mean, they knocked the top off the casket and everything else. I mean, they get into a bombing. I mean, it's a straight fist fight. And I thought to myself, you know, just maybe you need to realize that if he was dating multiple people all at the same time, he probably wasn't worth fighting over, Austin. What do you think? And I mean, I watched that, and I think to myself, how in the world can people get this messed up? But reality is this. When you go out on a date, and before you get serious about it, you better do a background check on them. And if they don't have values and cultural values and morality values like you need to have in your life, it's best just to move on and, you know, walk away. By the way, Melania Trump came out yesterday. And for some reason, she decided, I guess before she decides what she wants to get on her 737 luxury aircraft and fly around, that she has nothing to do with Epstein and never knew really, hung out with him, but she made a full-blown press conference.
It was very oddly timed. I don't know if she's getting that much blowback.
Apparently, the pictures of her circulating with Epstein
Correct.
And Ghislaine Maxwell and her dad, her husband, are really starting to irritate
well,
her.
And I think the problem is, too, and we've said this, we're not dropping this. Nobody's been dropping
no,
this.
No.
Iran didn't get this dropped.
Nope, not yet.
And so I don't know if she's that irritated. She wanted to come out and do it. But it's ironic the fact that she came out now and she gave it credence. It popped it all back up in the media again. So she came out and said it. Now everybody's talking about Epstein again. Mm. So either that was a distractionary tool to try to get stuff off what happened with Lebanon. Because now everybody's talking about Melania suddenly. Nobody's talking about Lebanon just getting
Melania blasted. Can't even get people to show up at the movie theater.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, Stan, like, everything turned on. Everybody's discussing this now. Fox News is covering it. Nobody's covering Lebanon anymore. Okay. 1,500 dead overnight.
I got to say something about Melania. I got to say it. Okay, she was a model. There were some strange pictures of her online. They've mostly been scrubbed now. But I'm not going to go into detail with that because I don't care. People's passes are passed. But I will say one thing. I remember in 2016 when we were watching the inauguration. I remember this. This is, you know, 10 years ago now with Trump the first time. She basically comes walking out. And the reason I remember this is because Sharon made a big deal about it. She comes walking out in a blue outfit with perfectly matching blue gloves. And I thought to myself, that's got to be the prettiest first lady I've ever seen.
I remember this classy outfit.
You talk about it. You talk about an expensive outfit.
But
I remember that. So when she comes out now trying to distance herself from this whole mess, because remember what she's doing here with Nepsi, she's distanced herself from Trump's relationship with Epstein, too.
That's exactly what she's doing.
She's basically said, hey, just because I'm married to this guy doesn't mean I was hanging out with one of his friends. And so I kind of respect her for that, but I kind of wonder why she's doing it.
Yeah, it's oddly timed.
But it was a blip. I mean, it was the news covers that nobody cared about. It's like this stupid Orion spaceship.
Well, no, but
there's a lot
more people that are covering this thing with Epstein now because of her. Because it triggered another algorithm. Mm-hmm. That's what it did. It covered another hashtag algorithm on all these Twitters. Twitter's been blowing up on it. And now you got RFK Jr. This is pretty cool. Nobody's talking about this. He is starting his own podcast now that's going to be on independent, basically like almost like a Global Star setup. They can't shut down. RFK Jr. starting a private podcast aiming at exposing lies about health. Said the podcast is about telling the truth, especially when it's uncomfortable. The Secretary Kennedy podcast.
You know, what's going to happen is, I hate to say it, in my speculation, I think it's going to happen. I doubt he'll make the full 4 years with Trump because he's raking too many people over the fire as far as high-level people that have contributed to Trump
and
these major corporations, big pharma.
Yeah, I mean, they came out with that article last month talking about how the vaccine sales for all the big pharmaceutical companies are up to the floor.
And here's speculation. Maybe he's doing this with the podcast to build his own audience so when he's taken off the national scene, he still reaches a huge group of people.
That is exactly what I think he's personally does. Exactly what I was about to say. This is a brilliant move if that's why he's doing it, because he knows there's going to be a point in time where they're going to cut him loose. They're not going to allow him to keep doing this with the vaccines. They're losing too much money. So now if he builds an audience, when he has this position, he can carry that audience later on down the road and continue to make a difference with what's going on. And because of his following, he'll probably be able to monetize it pretty well.
I hope so. By the way, Trump is now telling J.D. Vance to find a way out of the Iran war as vice president prepares to fly to Pakistan for peace talks.
Woo, that's a sketchy flight.
A couple weeks ago when we rescued that airman, you know, Paul Craig Roberts wrote an article on that. And he said it was not what you thought it was. He said they were going in to hit a nuclear plant over there, and they got basically intercepted. Paul Craig Roberts did a good job on this, and I posted this so you guys could read it. But the crazy part about it is, he said that what happens is we got our butts handed to us over there, you know, with hundreds and hundreds of Marines and special op forces, and we had to leave, and then we had to blow up our own stuff on the way out the door because they were hitting them so heavy with missiles.
I don't know if that's accurate or not. That's speculation.
Now this is the only reason I brought this up.
Yeah.
Is because of Paul Craig Roberts. He used to have a cabinet position.
Yeah, no, I know. But I haven't heard that from any of my intel guys either.
You know, and that's why I wanted you to ask what is going on to your with you know, with
contractors. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know, J.D. Vance going to Pakistan. That's a sketchy trip. You do understand where Pakistan is. It's right side of Iran. I mean, it's right in the middle of this hot zone right now, the middle of ceasefire. I don't know if they're going to be flying over Emirates. Or they're going to be coming in the opposite direction from China. I don't know. I mean, they're going to have some serious, serious firepower in the sky bringing him in.
I'm going to report this, okay? Because because that whole thing happened with hundreds and hundreds of people and all that special force stuff going in to rescue an airman who they'd never given us his name yet.
No, they have. That is one thing about it. Usually once they, if he's safe a lot. Now, if he's deceased, they won't give it out until the family knows. Apparently, he's not deceased.
He said, U.S. suffered a major strategic defeat and a failed IFAS-HOUND operation. Now listen to this. Information obtained by Press TV regarding the recent operation by U.S.-Israel coalition in this Fostan province reveals a major strategic defeat for the enemy. That's what it says. U.S. President Donald Trump's frantic threats the past few days as far as what he's going to do. The failed raid was carried out after they were going after a nuclear site. After the enemy conducted extensive aerial reconnaissance operations. During the initial infiltration and reconnaissance missions, the U.S. and possibly the Zionist regime lost a significant number of aircraft, including A-10 Thunderbolts and helicopters. We know that's true. Yeah. The information Press TV reveals is that 0 hour of the failed operation was set during a secret meeting of the White House. Now become clear the operation had no connection to the claimed rescue of a downed F-15 pilot.
That's interesting.
Okay. A narrative initially pushed by the United States. The landing site for the C-130 transport aircraft is chosen based on previous reconnaissance was an abandoned airstrip located dangerously close to one of the three nuclear sites. Now, what's interesting about this plane came in. And it says the Americans miscalculated, believing the Iran's air defense would be unable to confront the aircraft involved in the operation. However, Press TV learned that the deployment of numerous U.S. aircraft occurred while the Iranian armed forces were in full alert, waiting for them. In fact, American special forces fell directly into a trap. The Iranian armed forces, including the army, the law enforcement, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, and local popular forces, initially did not show a serious reaction to the landing of the first C-130, which was carrying dozens of special forces commandos. Evidence shows the aircraft veered somewhat off the runway while landing at the abandoned dirt strip. Minutes later, a second C-130 approached, carrying specialized vehicles, several MH-6 Little Bird helicopters, and other special support equipment. At that moment, Iranian forces on the scene targeted the second aircraft before it could land, turning its normal landing into an emergency one. Then two Black Hawk helicopters also arrived shortly after. It was after that moment the aircraft helicopter commandos who had debarked from the first plane became perfect targets for the Iranian armed forces. And I'm going to let you guys read this. It goes into detail. So the rescue operation was conducted so hastily that some soldiers and officers abandoned their equipment, according to the evidence possessed by Press TV and the identification document, and they had to destroy their own equipment. And that's true. They did that. So, I mean, this thing sounds more like this thing that they're doing. Usually they're not going to go in to rescue one pilot like that with 200 armed commandos or whatever they had.
No, so, or they, well, they may have done.
So I want you to ask your special forces
guy. I'll ask
him.
Because what they more likely would have done, they would have sent in basically airborne. They would have sent in a halo jump with the guys and basically got in and secured him and then basically that's a heavy show of force dropping all those guys in like that.
Well, if something else
would have been going on.
If they're going for a nuclear facility, that's
correct.
Oh, we're out of time. Oh, wow. Is that right?
Again, I'll do more research on that. I can't verify that right now.
Yeah, we're going to touch it on
that. Don't quote me on that or quote us on that, but we'll pull it up more. If you guys need anything, You know where to get a hold of us. Healthmasters.com. Grab some collagen while it's on sale for pre-order. It'll be shipping out next week. Purple sticks, we got those for you. We got some more coming in. So be sure to stay on top of them if you need anything. Healthmasters.com. And thank you for leaving us reviews on all the products. They're racking up. And I love seeing the support and the positive effects. You guys have a fantastic, blessed, safe weekend. Enjoy yourself. And we'll talk to you again on this show Monday, as always.
Hey, I love you guys. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for realizing that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I appreciate you again. Have fun in church on Sunday. Yes. Hope to see you there, and we'll talk to you guys on Monday.